support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Stephen Sondheim's rapturous musical, A Little Night Music. Featuring an all-star cast, A Little Night Music begins performances at ACT's Geary Theater May 20th. ACT-SF.org.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour, in the first segment of the hour, we'll get responses from Max Boot and Shadi Hamid, and analysis on recent gains by ISIS in Ramadi. And we'll follow that up in the bottom of the hour with an interview with Bruce Bochy, the manager of the world champion San Francisco Giants, who recently published a book on walking. Join us for Forum. It's next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Fighting among Islamic State militants and Shia-led militias continues around the Iraqi city of Ramadi following the city's fall to ISIS over the weekend. The city's capture, which occurred despite increased airstrikes in the region, has renewed criticism of the United States' efforts to defeat the Sunni extremist group. And in this opening segment of our first hour, we discuss the political and military implications of the fall of Ramadi and whether the United States should rethink its strategy in the region. Joining us from New York City is Max Boot, Senior Fellow for National Security Studies on the Council on Foreign Relations and also author of Invisible Armies, An Epic History of Guerrilla Warfare from Ancient Times to the Present. Max Boot, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Shadi Hamid, who is a fellow with the Brookings Institution's Center for Middle Eastern Policy and author of Temptations of Power, Islamists and a Liberal Democracy in a New Middle East. And welcome, Shadi Hamid.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin, if I may, with Max Boot, and begin also by saying that Iraqi security forces actually withdrew on Sunday from Ramadi. That's the capital of Anbar province, and Islamic militants from ISIS carried out executions, at least 500 that we know of. It's safe to say, from whatever perspective you look at this, Max Boot, that the Obama strategy is not working?
It is not working in spite of the claims otherwise coming from the White House and from the Pentagon. I mean, they are trying to deny the obvious, which is that our anti-ISIS strategy is failing, something that's obvious to the entire world. And I would hope that they would end their state of denial, and instead of claiming that everything is still going okay, which is kind of the party line at the moment, I would hope that they would instead confront the dire reality that we actually face and start to think about what fundamental changes do we need to make in our strategy to have more success than we've had to date. And we've had no real success to date, almost none.
Well, there was success in Tikrit, and the president spoke certainly about degrading or destroying ISIS. But the defeat in Tikrit of ISIS had a great deal to do with Iranian help. And at this point, we're excluding that, or trying to exclude it, or certainly did with the fall of Ramadi. How much do we have to rethink that strategy, and how much do we have to rethink boots on the ground?
Well, I think we need to rethink all of that, because unfortunately what's been happening is that in the guise of fighting ISIS, Iran has been extending its influence in Iraq, basically carrying out the same strategy it's already carried out in Lebanon and Syria, with Iranian-backed militias now becoming the most powerful military force in Iraq, and that's a threat to us just as much as ISIS is. We should not be allowing either Shiite or Sunni extremists to dominate Iraq. So we need a strategy that counters both sets of malign actors, which we don't currently have. And, you know, unfortunately, what's been happening is, you know, Tikrit is really an exception. That was a city that was taken largely by the Iranian militias. But other than that, ISIS has not suffered a lot of setbacks. They've extended their control in both Syria and Iraq at the same time that the Shiite militias are extending their control in Iraq. So That's the reality.
I think from Max Boot's perspective, Shadi Hamid, he'd like to at least put, I don't want to speak for you here, Max Boot, but I think this reflects your thinking here, like to at least put boots on the table, back on the table, or as an alternative or as a possibility, because you heard certainly the kind of intensity he feels that this strategy is failing. I'd like to not only get your perspective on that, but also you seem to see, well, Syria is much more important in many ways than Iraq.
Yeah, well, first, I agree with Max about the failure of U.S. strategy. And this is an administration that tends to think quite short-term, quite tactically, ad hoc. And we have to kind of take a step back and rethink the basic assumptions of our approach. And I think that the kind of Iraq-first approach is problematic, especially when that means we're leaving Syria to its own devices and not focusing on that part of the struggle. ISIS treats Iraq and Syria as a combined theater. Even Shia militias, some treat Iraq and Syria as a combined theater. So why are we making this kind of artificial distinction? And I'm also someone who's thought for a long time that if we want to understand how ISIS was revived, we have to look at Syria. And that's where ISIS gained prominence because of the power and political vacuum. And then we see spillover effects into Iraq. And we don't have any Syria strategy. I mean, we can debate about whether we're on the right path in Iraq. But Syria, the most we can really offer is, you know, promises of $500 million to train 5,000 fighters, which is really a drop in the bucket. So we have an Iraq strategy. We don't have an ISIS strategy. And until we get one, we're going to have a big problem.
You have somebody like Lindsey Graham in the Senate saying we need 10,000 troops in Iraq.
So I'm not someone I think we have to have limits here. I think that there's sometimes a tendency when we're facing these challenges to say more airstrikes, more troops, more U.S. military provisions. And again, I worry that this is very tactical thinking without looking at the root causes of ISIS's rise. As long as you have these fundamental governance deficits in the region, as long as you have ungoverned space, extremist groups are going to be powerful, especially when the alternative is Shia militias. So if you're a Sunni in Iraq, you might hate ISIS, but if you have to choose between ISIS and a Shia militia, you might actually go for ISIS. So we have to look at these deeper trends.
You were talking about the roots of ISIS. Don't they go back to Iraq and Zarqawi?
Yeah, if we want to go back to the original sin, we have to look at the Iraq War. And that's where the precursor to what we call ISIS today gained prominence in Iraq. But then it was largely, it waned in influence. It became somewhat irrelevant. And then, as I said, it was revived in Syria after the Arab Spring.
So, Max Boot, is Ramadi a turning point?
Well, I don't know that it's a turning point. It's a confirmation of what's been obvious since the fall of Fallujah and Mosul last year, which is that ISIS is winning. And I completely agree with what Shadi is saying about how this is not just an Iraq problem, it's also a Syria problem. And we don't have a strategy to counter ISIS in Syria. I don't think we have a strategy that works in Iraq. I agree with him that, you know, a huge part of what we need to change is political. And I think we need to, for a start, be willing to arm and support Sunni tribesmen because those are going to be the decisive actors against ISIS. And we need to offer them assurances that they will not be abandoned if they fight against ISIS, as they were abandoned after they fought against al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2007. But I think we also need to do more on the military front. We need to lift some of the restrictions which prevent our military personnel from being effective. They can't just go out there and work with the Sunni tribesmen in the way that they and accompany them on operations in the way that they did during the surge in 2007. Those are restrictions we need to change. I think we also need to lift the artificial limitation imposed by this White House of only having 3,000 troops in Iraq. That's not enough to get the job done. I think we need more. But I agree with Shadi fundamentally that it's not going to be a matter of simply sending U.S. troops. We also need to rethink our larger approach and our political strategy first and foremost.
Well, it appears that when we do send armaments, Humvees or whatever the armaments might be, they wind up in ISIS hands.
Yeah, that's a sign of how our current strategy is failing, because we're delivering these armaments to Iraqi security forces that are demoralized, undersupplied, all but defunct, who flee in the face of the enemy. And, you know, a lot of what we send winds up in the arms of either ISIS or the Shiite militias. And those are the two truly powerful military forces. I don't think that either one really represents the majority sentiments of the people of Iraq. But we're not doing enough to support moderates, whether it's Prime Minister Abadi, who is, I think, a relative moderate, a Shiite, but a moderate one. But he's relatively powerless compared to all these Iranian agents who hold true power in Baghdad. And we're also not doing enough to support the Sunni tribesmen who don't like ISIS but also don't like the sectarian Shiites. So we need to offer them a third way, and we're not doing that.
Shadi Hamid, since Max Boot mentions Prime Minister Abadi, the fact of the matter is that Ramadi is a defeat for him as well, is it not?
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, we're going to see spin as a result. But, you know, I think that Abadi is, in a way, very constrained. So he might have the right intentions. But as Max says, we've really been having this debate for a year. We keep on saying, oh, Abadi, the new leadership, they're going to do better when it comes to outreach to Sunnis. But we haven't really seen a serious, sustained effort to empower Sunnis and make them feel like they're part of the political process. And that leads to a situation where Sunni tribesmen, they see the Iraqi government as a fair-weather ally, fair-weather friend, and they see us in the same way. They have to know that they can count on both the U.S. and the Iraqi government going forward. But what they see instead is the domination of Shia militias. And, for example, Abadi wasn't able to push through legislation to fund and build a Sunni-led Iraqi National Guard. That would be a step in the right direction, but there's been a lot of resistance from his government internally.
That's always seemed like at least a matter as far as a political solution to move more toward conciliation where the Sunnis are concerned in Iraq. But since you're putting emphasis on Syria, what do we look for with a political situation there? I mean, we've constantly been in one hornet's nest after another, and it seems like any group we decide to back other than so-called moderates works against us.
Well, I mean, we're falling under the thrall of short-term thinking in Syria as well, that, you know, you hear this quite a bit in D.C. from people, oh, well, Assad is better than ISIS, let's kind of indirectly or even directly coordinate with the Assad regime. This administration hasn't gone as far as that, but we have, in effect, been acting as the Syrian regime's air force in certain situations when, you know, we're targeting ISIS and other groups. But we're letting the Syrian regime, you know, have free reign. And this is where you have to look at the root causes of the situation. Why was ISIS able to rise in Syria? First, because of the brutality of the Assad regime, and also because the Assad regime likes having ISIS there so they can point and say, well, look, this is the alternative to us. Stay with the Assad regime. So I think that we have to think more seriously about putting pressure on the Assad regime. I know it's not really part of the debate here in Washington, but I've been a proponent of targeted military strikes, not just against ISIS in Syria, but also against the Assad regime. And I think we'll have to think about that at some point, because if we're training 5,000 rebel fighters, they're not just going to fight ISIS. They're also going to fight the Assad regime's military forces. Are we going to let them get slaughtered, or are we going to provide them protection in those battles? And that's still an open question.
All right, let me open the phone lines and question you, our listeners, as to what you at this point would like to see in terms of a better strategy or a more efficacious strategy with respect to ISIS and fighting ISIS now, especially that Ramadi has fallen and 70 miles from Baghdad. I'd like to hear from you, and you can call us now and let us know what you think. This is a half-hour segment, so the time to call would be now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, so we invite you to join the program. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this particular segment, or, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And we will indeed go to your calls and emails here forthwith. I just want to get just a military strategy from you, Max Boot, if you could. I mean, obviously, from your perspective, we need to have more airstrikes. And there are a lot of listeners and certainly people in the Obama administration who would balk at that, I'm sure, and say what we need to do is perhaps back off or be less involved. But what else do you see as necessary here when you say, for example, leave boots on the ground on the table? What does that mean?
Well, I think for a start, we need to take some of the shackles off the people that we already have on the ground, where they're not able to go outside their bases. They're not able to operate in conjunction with Iraqi forces. I think we need to change that to give them more freedom of action for a start. We need to have more of them on the ground. And I think, as Shadi suggested, our our strategy change should extend to Syria as well, where I completely agree with him that, you know, we can't be expecting these Sunnis to fight against ISIS while we're letting Assad slaughter, you know, Sunnis by the thousands all the time. We need, I think, to ground Assad's air force. We need to create safe zones along the borders of Syria with Turkey and Jordan where the moderate Syrian opposition can start to rule, and we can create an alternative between the Iranian-dominated radical Shiites and the radical Sunni jihadists of the al-Nusra Front and ISIS. Fundamentally, I think the core of the issue is empowering the Sunnis to fight against these extremists, and the only way you're going to do that is by assuring them that ISIS or the al-Nusra Front is not the least bad option, and which is what they think now, because they think that those extremist groups are better for them than allowing themselves to be dominated and killed by Shiite radicals, whether in Baghdad or Damascus. And so we need to get a strategy to empower those Sunni forces, the same ones that defeated al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2007. We need to empower them today, and we can't afford to allow Baghdad to exercise a veto over that, which is currently what's happening, where Iranian domination is preventing this National Guard of the Sunni tribesmen from being formed. I think we need to just make a decision that we're going to go ahead and work with the Sunni tribesmen, no matter what people in Baghdad say.
All right, I want to bring our callers in. Bobby, let me go to you first. You're on.
Hi, and what seems to be a classic U.S. foreign policy these days, we've talked about who we should support. We should support the Sunnis. We should support the Shias. No, we should support these guys or those guys. But in the end, we still haven't even really, you know, outlined who is it in the end of all of this, the actual goal here. Who is it that we want to see rise to power? And not only who we want to see, but who can actually rule this region peacefully and be a long-term solution, have staying power. Instead of doing this short-term, let's support these guys to kill these guys and those guys to kill those guys. In the end, what's the ultimate goal, and then how do we get there?
No, it's a good pragmatic question. Shadi Hamid.
The long-term goal has to be building inclusive and at least somewhat democratic societies and governments throughout the Middle East. That because of this short-term approach that we have, look at our allies in the fight against ISIS. We're working with some of the most repressive regimes in the region, and they themselves are part of the problem in terms of pushing people outside of the political process and fueling polarization and radicalization in the region. So we have to think, well, what's the place for democracy and democracy promotion in our broader Middle East strategy? And I know democracy has become a bad word because of the Iraq War, the Bush administration, and the failure of the Arab Spring, but we shouldn't lose sight of the basic issues of governance, that anytime you have an ungoverned piece of territory, it's extremists like ISIS who are going to come in. And the reason you have ungoverned territory, failed and failing states, is because you have, first of all, governments that are repressive, governments that aren't representative, and governments that don't know how to run their own countries. So we have to keep our eye on some of those longer-term trends, but I'm pessimistic because this administration, if anything, has very much de-emphasized democracy as part of our U.S. strategy to the extent that you barely even hear them mention the word.
Well, in some respects, that's probably because of the neocon philosophy, isn't it? They wanted to spread democracy to the Middle East, and to a great extent, the Obama administration is reacting against the failure of that.
I understand. Yeah, that's certainly true. But why do we have to be in this reactive mode where just because Bush messed up on something that Obama has to go in the exact opposite direction? Bush was a disaster for the Middle East. And I have no hesitation in saying that. But Bush didn't get everything wrong. And I think at least rhetorically, this understanding that the only way to address extremism in the long run is by promoting more democratic governance, I think actually the Bush administration was right on that basic premise. Of course, they themselves didn't even follow through with their own rhetoric, and that's where I think the tragedy is. But why do Syrians, for example, or other Middle Easterners have to pay the price for the Bush administration's mistakes?
All right, let me get another caller on. Scott, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. When I hear anyone say, oh, there's got to be a political solution, it always makes me immediately think of the likelihood of a political solution between Israel and the Palestinians, like near to impossible. So in that sense, do you really in your heart of hearts think that a political solution is possible? And the second question is, don't you think we're just simply trying to contain this fire that's going on over there? That and our inaction, or I just see inaction, really, I guess, is what I'm saying. So just wanted to get your comments.
Okay. I think we've heard Chadi Hamid say to some extent that we have to have a political solution. How feasible, how plausible in your mind, Max Boot, would that be?
I think it's plausible. It's not going to be this grand political solution for the entire region. We're not going to reach a deal with between Israelis and Palestinians. We're not going to reach this grand accord with Iran and so forth. But I think on a much more micro level, it is possible to have political deals. And in fact, we saw those political deals occur in Iraq in 2006, 2007, 2008. It was really those political deals that weaned the Sunnis away from al-Qaeda in Iraq and got them fighting with U.S. forces against al-Qaeda in Iraq and in tacit support of the government in Baghdad, because there was outreach from Baghdad towards the Sunnis. The Sunnis felt like they had a role in Iraqi government, that their rights were respected. Unfortunately, all of that changed. As soon as we pulled our last forces out in 2011, Prime Minister Maliki started victimizing the Sunnis, and as a result of that, drove the Sunnis into the arms of ISIS. That's what we need to reverse. It is reversible. It's not impossible. It's going to be difficult, but it is something that is doable, and it is necessary in order to defeat ISIS. You can't beat ISIS without weaning them away from their Sunni support.
Chadi Hamid, the caller, had a point, though. We're now just kind of firefighting, aren't we?
That is what we're doing now. And I think that this is actually, it demonstrates the cost of dithering. The more we wait and the more we don't do much at all, the problems accumulate, especially in a region like the Middle East. So they get to a point like last summer where Mosul falls to ISIS and we're caught unaware. We weren't planning ahead. Just 5 months prior to that, Obama had called ISIS the JV team, which is a remarkable thing to say considering what ISIS had already gained by that point. So at some point you have to say, well, we have to stop just firefighting and we have to stop just reacting after the fact. There has to be something resembling a proactive affirmative strategy. Might there be short-term costs as a result? Sometimes there is a trade-off between short-term and long-term interests. But I think what we've seen the past 6 years is that short-term ad hoc thinking, it might make sense in the immediate term, but then you start to see the costs afterwards, and then it's too late.
All right, I want to get a quick call on, and that's Eric, who served in the Iraq War. Eric, go ahead. Let's hear what you have to say.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I spent a long time there as an infantry officer on the ground, and I have to say that all this talk about, you know, backing the militia here, backing the militia there, sending a couple troops in, to me seems to fly in the face of everything that I saw. I don't think that will work. I think if it's even possible that that would work, it's going to take probably 500,000 troops over 50 years, and it may not even work then.
I'm afraid we're going to have to end on that rather bleak note, but Eric, I thank you for your input, and I thank Chadi Hamid, who is, again, a fellow with the Brookings Institution Center for Middle East Study and author of Temptations of Power, and I thank Max Boot, who is Senior Fellow for National Security Studies with the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Invisible Armies. And when we return, we're going to take a decided turn. We're going to take a dramatic turn and meet the manager of the San Francisco Giants, the world champion San Francisco Giants. Bruce Bochy will join us. Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.